In a small village in the Ukraine, the village of Lvov, there was a rabbi, Rabbi Samuel. Rabbi Samuel was a pious and generous man, but also a man of very little means. And Rabbi Samuel often was cared for by the community. He lived in a little hut just outside the village by himself, mostly kind of in a hermitage kind of way, but known by the community, and the community loved him, and he loved his community. And they did care for him. Jews and Gentiles alike would bring their offerings and make sure he had enough sustenance to go on. Now, one night, Rabbi Samuel had a dream. It was a very, very vivid dream. And in this dream, he saw a bridge in Vienna. And he saw it vividly. He saw exactly how all of the pieces fit together in this bridge. And underneath the bridge, there was a treasure, his dream told him. And it didn't only tell him there was a treasure, but it told him, go, find that treasure, for it is yours. Rabbi Samuel woke with a start. It was such a vivid, vivid dream. And he didn't know what to do about it. He said, how could a treasure be mine if I didn't put it there? And he was in this conflict with himself, because surely he could have benefited from some treasure. And so he spent some time thinking about it, and he finally went to consult some other rabbis. And they told him, if you've had this dream and it is so vivid, you should go. For if the dream tells you the treasure is yours, it is yours. So off he went with a little pick shovel in his backpack and all the food he could gather, some bread and a cask of water. And this was Vienna. It was pretty far from his little village of Lvov. But he went anyway, and it took him some time to get there, and he slept in the brambles or finding some soft places as he could along the way. And finally, he arrived in Vienna, and there was the bridge, and it looked just like the one in his dream, so he knew he must be at the right place. But walking back and forth on this bridge was a guard. And he knew he could never just hop down underneath the bridge and start digging for his treasure. That would be ridiculous. So he was patient, and he waited. And a few days passed, and he waited by that bridge, and that same guard was there every single day. And finally, the guard had noticed him as well, and so the guard came up to him and said, Rabbi, what brings you here? I've seen you here for a number of days. And the rabbi said, well, this could be a little foolish, but I had a dream, and it told me to come to this bridge, and that there would be a treasure buried underneath, and it would be my treasure. And so here I am, but you've been walking back and forth, and I thought it would be a little foolish for me to just start digging. And the guard looked at him and said, well, it's foolish for you to be here at all. Why, I had a dream 20 years ago, that I was supposed to go to this little village in the Ukraine, the village of Lvov, and find a hut, and there in the floorboards. And the hut was owned by a man named Samuel, and there in the floorboards would be a treasure. Well, if I had followed that dream, it would have been a ridiculous thing to do. Go home, Rabbi, go home. So the rabbi went home and dug underneath his floorboards, and there was the treasure. It was a large and mighty treasure, and he kept some of it for himself so he could sustain himself, but he also gave most of it back to the village, to the children of the village, and to the other rabbis of the village so they could build a synagogue, a temple to honor God. Now, this story comes from my colleague, Ken Collier, and he wrote it specifically, about this fourth principle, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. He writes, in our lives, we are being called to find our treasure, our hidden boon, and to discover the hero within our own hearts. I need my glasses. And he also invokes, in this essay he wrote, he ties the first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, to the fourth principle. The fourth principle, the one we're doing, the free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And what he says is, in that first principle, oftentimes we imagine that about other people, but it's hard to imagine that about ourselves. It takes some time in our own lives to really be anchored in our own inherent worth and dignity. All the wounds of childhood, all the ways we're battered around by life can wear away at that inner core knowledge that we are worthy and beautiful and have gifts to offer. But as we grow and develop and we can feel a little bit of steadiness in that, then the search can begin. And so what I love about this story, because I think this is a story about our soul work. What I love about this story, there's a few things that I just love, that it's in the basement. It's hidden underneath in our own homes and places, in our part, it's underneath and hidden. Not somewhere out there. But the rabbi had to go on a long, hard journey to find it. And it wasn't handed to him. It was within him, within his place, the whole time. But he had to do the journey to find that out. And I think another important piece is that finding his treasure led him to give it away. Our search for truth and meaning for ourselves enables us to expand our self-interest. One of the questions that Pete asked me as I was mulling this is, how do we know that it's really an inner truth? And I feel like one of the ways we know that we are kind of anchored in the inner truth of who we are to be is that it invites us to be more expansive and less self-interested than who we might be. So our truths, the things that would be our callings, our soul work, is bigger than ourselves. As the treasure that he found, he gave to others to be bigger than his own caring for his own self. And in this story, he needed to both take his dreams seriously and listen to others so that he could find his treasure. There's a both and there. You can't do it all in a hovel by yourself. You have to be in relationship to understand where your own inner truth is. So I believe that each of us has a calling. Each of us has a thread that runs through our lives. A thread that William Stafford described in his poem, The Way It Is. He said, there's a thread you follow. It goes among things that change, but it doesn't change. People wonder about what you are pursuing. You have to explain about the thread. But it's hard for others to see. And while you hold it, you can't get lost. Tragedies happen, people get hurt or die, and you suffer and get old. Nothing you do can stop time's unfolding, but you don't ever let go of the thread. I also believe that you don't have to name that thread you're holding to have it. That we have a thread, we have this inner pursuit, this inner drive that doesn't necessarily have to be named. It's happening. It's like the flow and course of our life. But when we take the time and the practice to name it, our lives get richer and deeper, and we can follow it with more gusto and more passion. And this is where spiritual practice comes in. This is where spiritual practice comes in. In order to understand what our own thread is, what our own pursuit of truth and meaning for our own lives, we need to quiet ourselves down. Parker Palmer talks about the soul as a wild animal. He said, how do you find a wild animal? You don't go traipsing through the woods. You are quiet. You are slow. You sit and wait for it to appear. In that silence, my dreams arose. We live such busy, frenetic lives. We live such busy, frenetic lives. And so finding the practices that slow you down, they don't necessarily have to be just sitting on the pillow in a, you know, contemplative om way. What are the things that allow you to slow down? Perhaps it's reading, it's spiritual reading. Perhaps it is meditation. Perhaps it's walking in nature. Or soulful and meandering conversations with friends. Those things that allow something new to pop up out of the busyness and the frenetic nature of most of the rest of our lives. They can point you there. Ask yourself what it is that quiets your mind's chatter. What helps you put down your to-do list and helps you be a human being rather than a human doing. Those spaces will help you on your search for inner truth and meaning. Now, I think the questions about inner truth change over the course of our lifetime. As a young adult, we might be asking, what is my inner truth? I can remember those days in my early 20s. I moved to California at 24 and was like, the world was my oyster, and that is where I spiritually grew up. The question was, who am I to be in the world? It's a vibrant, very alive time for many people in their lives. But then as I am reaching midlife, reaching, I say, oh, how naive. I will say, no, in midlife. My question is shifted. My question is, how am I living my inner truth? How am I living this? And is there a course change that is needed? Am I still holding on to the thread, even if I can't name it? And then in older life, what I hear from people in the ending parts of their life is, how have I lived my inner truth? And what's left to do in this one wild and precious life I have to live? And then as I thought about it, I thought there's also childhood. And in childhood, I think it's inner truth. What's inner truth? Let's go play. But in that, if you watch children, you can see their thread. You can see in their play, in their imagination, those places, that the beginnings of the river of their life. So all through our lives, it's there around us swirling. And our fourth principle invites us to be attentive to it, to name it if we choose, and to try and imagine how we have special, beautiful gifts to bring into the world. And that if we don't bring them into the world because of their uniqueness, because of our uniqueness, they will be gifts that the world will never receive. We're living in a time where we need everybody's most beautiful gifts to be out there, lived to their fullest potential. I invite us to lift up our gifts, to enter into those spiritual practices that allow you the spaciousness for the wild animal of your soul to come creeping forward and tell you what it is that it wants you to see about yourself, and to go forth and bring these gifts into the world freely and responsibly, because the world needs us now. Amen.